Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we begin our program by talking about garbage and recycling. The average American makes almost 5 pounds of trash per person. That's per person every day, not even counting recycling. So that adds up to about 250 million pounds of garbage a year in our landfills. And all that garbage causes lots of problems for our environment and for the health of you and me. Larry Mueller here, as I said, and I want to thank you for joining us today on the Ideas Network. May seem like a big problem to tackle, but our guest today has some great advice and tips for drastically reducing the trash that we create. Amy Corse is a blogger, and she's a teacher, and the author of a really fascinating book. It's The Zero Waste Lifestyle, Live Well by Throwing Away Less. And she joins us from Portland, Oregon. Amy, pleasure to have you with us today. Thanks for taking time to be with us.
Well, thank you very much.
I really appreciate it. How big a problem is garbage?
I think that garbage is a huge problem. And in addition to being a huge problem, it's an easy problem for us to solve as a society, quite honestly. So I think that if people are wanting to make some difference for the environment and not have to do a whole lot in the process, that working on garbage reduction is a great first step.
And as a nation, what are we throwing away?
Well, basically, we're throwing away packaging. We are throwing away food packaging. We're throwing away toothbrush packages and empty shampoo bottles and things of that nature. And so if we could just get away from all the disposable packaging, we would make a huge dent. We're also throwing away a lot of food, and that's a large worry. Not everybody composts or has access to the composting facilities that Portland does.
And of those, all that stuff that we throw away, how much of it could be redirected from the landfill, do you think?
Oh, I would say at least 90%, nearly all of it easily.
Oh, man. Mm-hmm. Why isn't it?
Because of convenience, I think, because we live such a frantic pace in our society, and you know that's life. We all are busy. It's much easier to buy a disposable water bottle and chuck it in the nearest garbage can, or even recycle it, than it is to remember your own water bottle at home.
Yeah, I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. I haven't given that phone number yet. If you would like to join in, how aware are you of the amount of trash that you produce? Are you interested in cutting down on it, but maybe you don't know where to start, or maybe you've already taken on that challenge, and maybe you have some tips to share. How do you get away from all of the trash? I know our trash is a whole lot smaller than it was, but in past years, we have a very good program in where we live in terms of recycling, but there's a lot more that I know I could do and our family could do personally, and probably you too. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Or post on my Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show. In fact, I hope you'll go to the Facebook page. We've got a link to Amy's book, and also some trash-free tips from the Green Garbage Project that we hope that you'll take a look at as well.
Great.
So I'm really pleased to be able to do that. You know, and most of us, you know, I thought, I'm recycling, so I'm doing a good job there. And frankly, as I look, we have one container for garbage and one container for recycling. And the recycling is always quite a bit larger in terms of volume than the garbage.
Yeah.
Which I think, you know, in past, you know, even 10 years ago, was probably the other way around.
I think so. One of my particular focuses actually is on reducing the amount of recyclables that people send to the recycling companies
as
well.
Yeah, and that's what I was kind of leading to. And maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
Well, absolutely. When we think about recycling, what the word recycle really implies is that a material can be broken down, melted down, and re-poured or reformed into its original form and used over and over again. And that is actually a misnomer for, excuse me, I'm sorry. And that's a misnomer for many many recyclable products. Plastic is a really good example. Many products do what we call downcycling, which means that once they're sent to a recycling plant, they can only be melted down once or maybe twice, and they can't be reformed back into their original material. The source material has degraded in some way, and so it doesn't have the stability that it had originally.
Yeah.
It can't hold up. And that's a real problem. And so rather than use a water bottle and recycle it, which is good, we want to actually get away from that whole, I'm so sorry, that whole reusable mindset in the first place, that whole disposable mindset in the first place, and think about things that are permanent and that we can really, really reuse, like an aluminum water bottle.
Well, you took a year. This is, mm-hmm. Your book's really fascinating, by the way. And you literally cut the amount of trash to the size of a shoebox. Is that correct?
Quite literally, between my husband and I, we reduced our amount of trash that we sent to the landfill to about 4 pounds. So that means over the course of the year, what we sent to the landfill for two of us is less than what the average American sends each day.
That's just absolutely amazing. If we could... would it even be possible, though, for all of us to do that?
You know, I think maybe not to that extreme of a level. But I will say that our biggest realization during this whole project was that this is actually easy. And I mean that to my core. It was not a difficult process. Once we had a system in place, once we understood really what could be recycled and how we could divert the materials that we were bringing into our house, it really became pretty easy. So with some simple steps, I do think most people could come fairly close.
And your book is so practically oriented. And I really like how you have meeting the goals at the end of the chapter. So you've got easy, moderate, and advanced methods, mm-hmm. which I think is great.
Well, absolutely. We wanted the message to me has always been, it doesn't matter what you do. Please just do something to help. And it doesn't matter if it's a big step or a small step. And not everybody has a life. They can take big steps right now, and I understand that. The book is aimed at anybody.
Yeah. And we have a lot of callers online to visit with you, so let's go to the phones.
Great.
And Dot in Marshfield, we turn to you first. Thank you for calling.
Hello.
Yes, what's on your mind?
Well, I'm interested in converting people to using bar shampoo instead of shampoo that comes in plastic bottles.
Mm-hmm.
And I've bought bar shampoo online. I don't have any of the websites in front of me, but if you just Google bar shampoo, it comes up. And it's just a way of avoiding plastic bottles.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A good point. Comment. I know, Amy, that you have comments on shampoos and plastic bottles just in general.
Well, absolutely. She's completely right. Soap is a beautiful thing, and most of us, I feel like, don't use soap any longer. Soap is completely zero waste. You buy it in a cardboard box that's recyclable, and then you use up the soap, and it's gone. And that's a perfect definition of exactly what we want to be doing. So rather than a bottle, a plastic bottle of body wash or shampoo or conditioner, maybe what we want to convert to is something along the lines of a bar shampoo. It's a great idea.
Yeah, great. Thank you, Dot.
Sure.
I appreciate the call. Kathy in Beloit, it's your turn. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I'm like speechless because I believe in everything she's saying, but it all stems also, I can't stand going to a grocery store and seeing all of the choices that we have, just for instance, crackers, or just for instance, all the different types of kinds of things that are made available to us, and I feel like we're the most spoiled country. And how do we fight doing, you know, having all of these choices and get to these corporations to stop producing things like that and suckering us in?
Absolutely. I will tell you that one of my great inspirations is the author Barbara Kingsolver. And Barbara Kingsolver wrote a book that's called Animal Vegetable Miracle, and that book is about her family's journey down the road of local eating, so only eating products that are produced by local farmers and meat and dairy in their local community. And I think that we vote with our dollar. So I think that if we tell grocery stores that we want local products and we actually follow through and buy them, or if we vote with our dollar by going to the farmers market or going to local small businesses, that might be our first step at least toward getting out of this really consumer-driven economy that we live in.
And you actually point out, I was thinking back, Kathy mentioned crackers. Well, you actually make your own. And the other one that was interesting to me was ricotta cheese. You make your own ricotta cheese, if I'm not mistaken, in about 30 minutes.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's one of my favorite things about the book, actually, and about this whole journey that I've been on, would be really you can make pretty much anything at home if you have time, energy, and sort of a, you know, experimenting spirit. And it includes a lot of different things like sour cream, like ricotta cheese, like bagels that you can make at home. We've just sort of lost this ability to fend for ourselves in exchange for convenience.
Well, it was interesting because you had quit making, or you were really cut back or not making at all lasagna anymore because you didn't like the packaging for the ricotta cheese, if I'm not mistaken.
That's completely right. Yeah, lasagna is one of my favorite things. And so rather than feel sad about that, I started researching it and realized that this is something anybody can do in any kitchen. And it's the easiest thing ever, and it is cheaper as well.
Excuse
me for interjecting, but they need to start that in schools and get back to teaching kids how to cook.
Yeah.
I agree completely. Thank you so much for answering my question.
Yeah, thanks, Kathy, for calling.
Thank you.
And by the way, you can join in, too, with your questions or comments as we visit with our guest today, Amy Korst. She is the creator of www.greengarbageproject.com and is the author of The Zero Waste Lifestyle, Live Well by Throwing Away Less. There, and she's got lots of practical tips for how you and I can get rid of and not really generate the amount of garbage that we're, at least that I was talk for myself here, that I generate. I've cut back, but I haven't nearly, I'm sure, I know that I could cut back more. And I have the tips for it right here in this book. So that's what's wonderful about it. The Zero Waste Lifestyle, the author Amy Korst. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. My guest today, Amy Korst, author of The Zero Waste Lifestyle, a fascinating book. Glad to have her along. Thank you for listening in. You may have questions or maybe experiences to share of your own. I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us as well at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We've got some of Amy's tips posted up there and also a link to her book. So I hope that you will do that. Go to the Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We have Jen, who sent us an email question, I believe. Do you have any compost tips for apartment dwellers and non-gardeners? My family composts now, but we're moving to an apartment soon, and I hate to think of all those food scraps going to the landfill.
Well, yes, I do. That is definitely a tough spot to be in. I've moved from a house where I had about an acre of property and a garden to a place kind of on the beach here, and there's not a lot of yard. And so I'm in the same situation, actually. I think that your best bet, if you're looking at living in an apartment and wanting to compost, would be using a worm bin. It's called vermicomposting. And there's all sorts of information about vermicomposting online or in my book as well. But basically the idea is that you invest in some worms. You can order them online, or a lot of public works departments in your local communities have these sorts of things available about this time of year, and you feed your worms compost, your food scraps, and you leave them in sort of a dark place, like maybe your garage or outside if you live in a warm enough area, and over time they turn your food scraps into compost or into a soil product. And even if you can't use this yourself, if you know anybody who gardens, they will take it off your hands.
Yep, absolutely. Katie and Stoddard, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hey there, guys. I'm just calling because this really struck a chord. My fiance and I and another friend joined forces and did this for a year, and it's an experiment. And it was pretty interesting. We had to make up the rules, and we ran into a lot of problems. We're in situations. We had to call each other up. You know, I was just given this the story. What do I do? Or do I have to eat all of this right now? Or and our biggest challenge was obviously packaging. And we're both artists, so we do a lot of shipping. So we found ways to take all the packaging we got, clean it, and put it, you know, and let it stack up and then use it as packaging material. And our other friend was an engineer, and he was playing with ways to melt down the plastic and make his own rope or make one giant plastic bag that we could use for, you know, chicken coop material or whatever, you know. It was just like one, like you were talking about experimenting, and that's what it was. It was like, okay, we can't throw this away. What can we do? And when you turned it on its head like that, it was just, it was a game, you know, and we definitely were over the year, and we learned a lot, and we're keeping some of our habits, and we're letting some go, but I just want to thank you for having this on the radio. It was great to hear.
Yeah, Katie, you definitely should be taking a look at the book just to kind of compare notes a little bit.
Yeah, right? All right, thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Any comment, other comment, Amy? Have you talked to others who have done this?
Absolutely. The book actually features four or five different families or couples or people across the country who have done this with children, with pets, in apartments or not. But I love to hear from those people and sort of start a community. So if anybody wants to email me, my email is on my Facebook page or in the book or on my blog, but it's amy@greengarbageproject.com. And I love, love, love to connect with like-minded people. But Katie's completely right. There's something very, very American in an experiment like this, because it's just the spirit of ingenuity and experimentation and how can I make this work?
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. Marion and Stitzer, Marlon, is it? I'm sorry.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. We are just a two-member household, and we take out about two garbage bags full of junk mail. How do you get rid of the junk mail?
Oh.
Well, absolutely. The junk mail is definitely a problem. There is a website, and I don't know it off the top of my head. I can maybe see if I can Google it while I'm on the program here. But there's a website that you can go to online, and you can unsubscribe from all that junk mail in the same way that you can unsubscribe from a junk email. But if I get junk mail, I certainly recycle it, certainly, because most of it is recyclable. But you have another option, which would be to call the company, the offending company that continues to send you piles and piles of junk, and tell them to take you off their mailing list. Or if that doesn't work, I know people who have mailed the junk right back to the company, and that certainly takes your own money. But it sends a pretty clear message if you attach a note that says, I don't want your junk and it's not mine to dispose of. Please take care of it yourself.
Ah, very good points. Thank you for calling, Marlon. Frank in Fort Atkinson, on to you. Thank you for calling.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. My wife and I, we talk about recycling quite a bit. And one of our concerns there, the amount of water we have to use when we rinse out containers, is that absolutely necessary with the modern-day recycling? Do we need to do an inordinate amount of rinsing? Is it triple rinsing? Is there any rinsing that's necessary?
I think you want to send things that are clean to a recyclable or recycling company. And that's actually more of a courtesy, because there are people who sort through all of your recyclables to make sure that things that are not recyclable don't get accidentally mixed in at the recycling plant. And so it's an issue of courtesy to those people. It's also an issue of hygiene for your own household. So I do worry as well about the water that is used. It doesn't need to be clean. You certainly don't need to run your recyclables through a dishwasher or something like that. But a quick rinse so there's no food residue is a good idea.
I had a Facebook comment from Susan, who was talking about garbage. She said, this is on our Facebook page. She said, I went out to the landfill in our county, and it was such a horrifying experience that I vowed to do even more recycling and composting than we were already doing, everyone should go see a local landfill. Also, when I traveled to India, I would see big piles of trash just put in the street every morning, but by evening it had pretty much disappeared because people will comb through it to reuse everything. It was interesting to see.
Yeah, landfill is really not a pretty place. I found out a bit about how landfills work during the course of researching for the book and then my project itself, and there's some very serious environmental issues that surround landfills. But the two biggest ones would be the runoff that is produced by any landfill, and that's what's called leachate.
Yeah,
and this is liquid that kind of seeps through the landfill and mixes with things that we throw away, like nail polish remover, insect killer. And if you have a good landfill, a new landfill, there's a liner that captures the leachate. But eventually things break, and so eventually that leachate can potentially seep out of the landfill and possibly into our water, and that's a large concern because it's just a toxic sludge.
What somebody wondered about the problem of disposable diapers, if you could address that.
Well, there's really no way around the fact that if you have a baby and you want to zero waste, you have to do the cloth diaper thing. I know that a lot of people today who have babies are busy and on the run, and that's a challenge. And so I think that a number of families are trying this sort of hybrid solution where there are disposable diapers that can go with them out and about into restaurants and things like that. But then when at home, you can use cloth diapers. And cloth diapering is a very practical solution, and it's gotten much better. My parents cloth diapered me, and they were just using the sort of flat diapers with the diaper pins. If you look up cloth diapers today, they're wonderful, and they're sort of like pull-ups, and they fit just like a real disposable diaper. The other concern with disposable diapers, there are some chemicals inside the liner, the soaking pad, that really probably should not be near a new baby's genitals, honestly. And there's some information about that in the book. And so a cloth diaper is a way to go. It's a healthier way to go for your baby, too.
A Facebook comment from Susan who says, I really appreciate the reusable mindset, especially since trying to recycle a significant amount of plastic. She feels it's almost impossible sometimes and mostly ends up in the landfill despite the number one, twos, and the fours. Mm-hmm. We're trying very hard to limit plastics in our home. And that's something you deal with in your book pretty extensively.
Certainly. I have some really serious concerns about plastic. If you think what I have done is extreme, you might want to check out the blog MyPlasticFreeLife.com, which is run by a woman in California, and she tries to live permanently without plastic, and she's very successful. And so we're following similar paths, her and I, although I don't focus as much on plastic. But plastic can't truly be recycled. It really, really cannot be recycled, and it can never, ever biodegrade. It will never turn back into earth elements. It will break down into smaller and smaller and smaller plastic particles, but those stay in our environment forever. So if we can work on eliminating disposable plastics, I'm not necessarily talking IV tubing from a hospital. Plastic has its place, but disposable plastics really need to be gone, and we need to send that message as consumers that we don't want our food packaged in garbage any longer.
You mentioned hospitals, and I know you talk about approaching your doctor, et cetera, about reducing waste. And Vivian emailed us, what do you do about the huge amount of trash generated by institutions, hospitals, and schools where individual meal portions are encased in plastic, for example?
Absolutely. An issue that's near and dear to my heart because I'm a school teacher. I work in a high school, and I know that there's a tremendous amount of waste, especially in the cafeteria. Each of our kids get a little styrofoam tray each day with their food on it, and it's just all thrown away. I think what you do is you, as an individual, constantly express your desire for a different way. And then you recognize that there's only so much that you can do. You can't necessarily force an entire hospital or an entire school to live this way, but you certainly lead by example. You can express to your boss or to your doctor cafeteria worker that you would appreciate a compostable or recyclable or reusable alternative. And I think just that message over and over and over again from lots and lots of people will eventually start to sink in.
Yeah. Joy and Cashton, thanks a lot for calling and for waiting. What's on your mind?
Oh, I love this program. I just pretty much refuse to buy things that are in containers that I can't. Glass, I guess, is pretty recyclable, but I avoid as much plastic as I can. Okay. And the styrofoam in hospitals and schools is abominable, I think. You know, they used to have dishwashers and employees that would send things through the dishwasher and this wonderful china in the institutions, and now they've gone to this styrofoam, and even at church dinners they serve on styrofoam, and the junk mail, all of it. Well, I make rugs. I crochet rugs out of old clothing. You can only use so many rags for your scrubbing and everything. So if you cut things in strips and crochet it into rugs, that's a good way to get rid of that.
Absolutely.
And I think we have too many little communities that don't allow dryers or don't allow clothes hanging.
Oh yeah, clothes
areas.
Clothes hangers are the clotheslines.
Mm-hmm. And using dryers all the time. I was in Germany, and they almost don't sell dryers in appliance stores because everybody hangs their clothes. And if they can't hang them outside, they have clothes racks inside, and they don't wash as much as we do, or as frequently as we do. It's you go to other countries, and you get a real eye-opener. And one time I commented to my daughter-in-law in Germany about, well, this wouldn't even be allowed in German in America. And she said, oh, yes, you Americans are quite special people.
Yeah, wasteful. Wasteful. Yeah. Comment, Amy?
Oh, I find exactly the similar thing. I went to Ireland a couple years ago, and she's completely right. It was nothing but clotheslines everywhere. And it's sort of hysterical, in fact, because Ireland rains quite a lot, and the clothes would hang out in the rain, and then eventually they would dry out again, and they just bring them in as soon as they're done. And we've lost some of these old world ways of doing things, and sometimes they weren't broken in the first place. We didn't really need to fix it. I also have to comment that I've always found this styrofoam and the disposable plastics, especially in hospitals, particularly ironic because these are places of health, and we know that eating out of glass is healthier than eating out of plastic, and I hope that the health community gets on board with this as well.
Email from Carol, and she does something that you talk about in your book that you and your husband do. She says, my husband and I keep two containers in the car at all times, so if when we go out to eat, we use those containers to take leftovers home instead of the styrofoam containers provided by the restaurants. We've received many compliments from the wait staff regarding this habit of ours. They like the idea and have shared it with associates, which is pretty cool. Once we eat the leftovers, we put the clean containers right back in the car, so we have them whenever we need them.
Absolutely. I get a lot of maybe pushback, not the right word, but concern about that idea because people feel like it's odd or unusual to walk into a restaurant with a Tupperware container and scrape your own leftovers into that container rather than ask for a styrofoam box. But I've never had a problem. I've never had a server look at me in a way that's anything other than curious or interested, and certainly that's very easy stuff that most anybody could take. It takes 2 seconds.
And a Facebook comment from Kyle who said, it lives in Madison, right, where this program is originating from, and says, I'm part of a pilot program where we can compost our disposable diapers throughout the city. Really easy.
That would be a huge development if we're able to do that. And that's what I mean about the spirit of ingenuity, that we don't need to stagnate as a society, and I'm getting a little preachy here, but we can solve many, many of these things. The green technologies that are coming out are fascinating and advancing very rapidly. We just have to embrace them and tell companies and public works departments that we want these things, and then money and energy and intelligence goes towards the new technology.
Absolutely. Nancy in Grafton, thank you for calling. Hi.
Well, good morning. I have an old house. Down in my basement, I have my automatic washer. But right next to it is my wringer washer. So I wash white things in my automatic, and I let the water go right over into the wringer, and then I wash darker things, and then I take them out on the clothesline, and I hang them out there. And, you know, our peelings all go in the garden, and all kinds of little critters come out and eat whatever they want. The rest gets rototilled in for fertilizer. And I just heard something the other day about old mattresses. There is somebody in the, I don't know if it's in this area or wherever, but they're taking old mattresses apart. And they're using the wood in the frame of the mattress for recycling. They recycle the felt and the cotton. Yeah. They also recycle the steel that's in there, the springs. I thought, how smart is that?
That's a great idea. Not something I've heard of either.
Yeah, I just read about that myself, too. We should talk about that. I'll have to look into that a little bit more. Maybe we can find that story and post it up on our Facebook page. That'd be pretty cool. Judith is already probably on it. she usually is right on top of everything here. That's great. Thanks, Nancy. And Jeff in Rhinelander. Hi.
Hi. Great show.
Thanks.
I work in Chicago quite often, and it's something that really bothers me is the entire city of Chicago, not including the suburbs, who do a real good job on recycling. The entire city of Chicago does not recycle anything. Everything goes in the garbage. Plastic, everything goes in the... It just blows my mind every time I go down there. Any comment on that?
Wow. Any comment on that, Amy? Oh, did we lose Amy? Oh, we did. We lost our guest, and we may get her back, and we may not. She's probably we lost our guest, so she's probably trying desperately to get back on with us. But Judith will work on it. The idea of a city the size of Chicago not having any way to recycle, for people to recycle, seems almost unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
Do they
totally unbelievable?
Do they don't? It's not possible that they have a system where everything just gets separated after the fact.
I don't know. That's a good question. That's just why I wanted to bring it up, because all these places I go, the high rise buildings, everything goes down the chute, it goes in the bins, and it just goes away.
Yeah. Well, we got Amy back here. We just temporarily lost her. Amy.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. Jeff in Rhinelander says, you know, he spends a lot of time in Chicago, and they have no, as far as he can tell, they can have no recycling. Everything goes in the same chute, in the same bin. And I'm not sure if they have some sort of special system in Chicago where they separate everything after the fact, or if they just don't recycle.
Well, I can't say specifically for Chicago because I don't know. It could be either. I've spent a little bit of time in Las Vegas because my brother works in Las Vegas, and their recycling there is it leaves some things to be desired. So it could be that. It also could be, though, that they're operating using a system that's called a Dirty MRF. That's an acronym, MRF. And a MRF is a materials recovery facility. And what happens at the MRF is everything, garbage, compost, recyclables, they're sent into this plant, and these workers that I'm talking about sort everything. So paper is sorted into one sort of conveyor belt, and the plastic to another, and garbage to a third. And so it is possible that it's being sorted out after the fact. But
wow.
that's not a convenient system. It's not a great system for recycling.
Yeah. You mentioned that you were a school teacher,
mm-hmm.
and I am wondering, as you were working on this project, if the kids got involved, or if you more or less kept the kids up to date on what was happening.
Well, so I'm a high school English teacher, and I work in a very small community called Tillamook, Oregon, where the cheese is from, Tillamook cheese, if you're familiar with that.
Yeah.
And so it's a small school. It's a farming community. It's a very agricultural community. And the focus here is absolutely not on recycling. So I've been a little bit of a anomaly to these students, to say the least. So they're fascinated by me, and they're fascinated by the fact that their English teacher has written a book. And so it's been a really cool discussion starter amongst them, because these students would really not care otherwise, because it's just not a focus of their everyday life. It's just not part of the culture. And so I'm able to, because it's interesting to them that I've written a book, and because they're checking it out from the library and buying it, it's absolutely started a dialogue, and I'm very thankful for that opportunity. And they know that they're supposed to recycle in my classroom, that's the rule, and they're very on board with it, which is great.
Donna Lotzer just sent us a link for the mattress recycling outfit, and it's in Watertown, Wisconsin, which is where my in-laws are, so I should have known that to begin with. and so if you want to check that out, Amy, you can.
Absolutely.
And yeah, absolutely. And just one, maybe time for Peter in Watertown, speaking of Watertown. Quick comment from you, Peter.
Yes, good morning. I am a science teacher in Watertown, and I work the lunchroom, and I'm always amazed how much food kids are throwing away. They might take a bite out of an apple or a pear or even a whole banana. Oh. And so I started bringing in 5-gallon buckets, and we're collecting a minimum of 20 pounds a day. So we calculate that to be about 9 tons a year. And then I take that up to a farm just to the north of us, and they feed their sheep. And about a month ago, she brought in 8 little lambs after they had lambed and brought them into my classroom, and we had a great time with that. So the kids got to see where their food was going, and we're hoping to expand that to the other elementary schools and the high school here as well.
That's great. That's such a great program, because the students can see exactly where their efforts are going.
Oh, it's wonderful. Amy, and thank you, Peter, by the way, very much. And Amy, thank you very much. I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, my pleasure.
I hope we get a chance to do it again.
Oh, thank you so much.
Our guest today, Amy Korst, who is the author of Zero Waste Lifestyle. You can live well by throwing away less. That's the subtitle. The Zero Waste Lifestyle, the main title, Live Well by Throwing Away Less. Amy Korst, the author, last name spelled K-O-R-S-T, and we have links up on my Facebook page. Go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We didn't get into a lot of tips, but we got through a few, but we've got even more posted from her green garbage project. So I hope you'll turn to that. Well, coming up, a couple of guys that don't waste any time at all, as a matter of fact. They're not wastrels at all, our weather guys. Steve Ackerman and John Martin, who are good stewards of the environment, I think, and they're coming up next to talk weather and our climate here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.